45. Explain what you're looking at, please.
Chair, what you have in front of you is the Department of Transportation, information systems overview and, policy packages that they've included in their, recommended 103 budget, governor's recommended budget, and they'll be going through, their program for the committee's benefit today.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dave White, Chief Information Officer for, Oregon Department of Transportation. I'd like to, thank you for the opportunity to talk about our program today. And, just before we get into it, just a brief overview of the materials in front of you. Just going to spend a little bit of time and go over some background material about, information technology at ODOT, then go into the, questions that the, committee had put to us, previously. And, then behind that is the, detail, on our initiatives, projects and, other related detail. And we can go as, deep as we need to on that. I've also included a, glossary of terms, some acronyms. I hope I, try to avoid those. But, most of these are, pertain particularly to ODOT and, try to explain some of the ODOT ease that, appears in this document. On, page 3, talk about, information technology at ODOT, really two facets. First of all, there's the information systems organization, central organization, which I manage. And, that is in the, central services division of ODOT. We have about, 75% of the IT budget within ODOT. The remaining pieces of the budget are in other limitations, and we can talk about that as we get to the budget portion. But, starting off, looking at the information systems organization on page 3, fairly typical, our technology management, organization consists of, mainframe data services, mainframe data center, which resides in the, revenue building. Workstation support, which, supports, PCs and also, provides support for intelligent transportation system devices around the state. Network services, which includes, wide area, local area network, servers, enterprise server applications such as email, those types of things. What we've done over the years is try to centralize all our technology management so we're more effective across the entire organization. In the, application development, arena, we have, three separate groups, and they are focused on very specific customer sets. The first one, largest, supports the highway division, supports, central services division, and, public transit, rail, and, transportation development divisions. Then we have a development group which supports, DMV and actually, is located out at, Lana Avenue with the business. And the same with, a group supporting, motor carrier. They are in the PUC building with the motor carrier business and dedicated to that business. Then the last, organization is what we call Office of Information Technology. This is the group that works on IT policy, planning, governance type functions. It's also where our computer security, group resides and our, help desk. Just for clarification, as we get to help desk, we actually have two help desks within the agency. We have one at, DMV, which is focused specifically on DMV, and then one which supports the other 3,000, personal computer users at ODOT.
What is the management structure? Who do you report to?
I report to, Mike Marsh, Deputy Director of Central Services.
So you don't, report to the director?
Mr. Chair, no.
And, has that always been with the history of the last couple of years?
Well, it's been like that for the last couple of years. I came on board, actually I was Grace's, first hire. So I came on board about 5 years ago. At that point in time, IS did report to the director. And, shortly thereafter, the Central Services, organization was created, along with the IS, Financial Services, Human Resources and our Support Services branch. Moving on to page four, just to give you some demographics of the organization, we support about 4,500 users, and that includes users outside of ODOT. About 400 to 500 of those users are outside our organization, cities, counties, other agencies. We have over 200 application systems, which I'll talk in a little more detail in the next page, about 18 million lines of code that we manage. The data center is 7x24, and on the mainframe, we process about 1.1 million transactions per day, and then also on the mainframe, run about 4,000 batch jobs every night, so quite a bit of processing. We have about 270 servers, which includes print servers, data servers, application servers, so forth, 4,700 personal computers, over 500 local area networks, and one of the other drivers is the number of facilities that we have computing equipment in around the state. You can see about 240 separate locations around the state that we support. Looking at page five, you look at our software environment, one of the drivers for both people and expense, I think, in information technology is the software environment that you support. And as I mentioned, we have about 200 separate systems, about 250 subsystems, and 22,000 individual programs in our portfolio. I put a couple of examples there. For example, a system would be like our vehicle system at DMV. A subsystem within that would be renewals. And then a program within that subsystem would be actual program that prints renewal notices. I also used probably not straight across the correlation, but if you looked at Microsoft Office as a system, subsystem being Word, and then possibly spell check as being a program, that same kind of hierarchy. As I mentioned, about 18 million lines of code that we support. It's probably higher than that. That was the number that came out of Y2K inventory. About half of that is mainframe code, the rest is client server code. We have 70 interfaces, active interfaces to different outside agencies. And then some of the other drivers of complexity, the number of programming languages that we support, COBOL, Visual Basic, C, Java, et cetera. We are a three-tiered application environment. The mainframe, as I mentioned before, our server environment is primarily NT, and we also have some Unix systems, both SCO Unix and Sun. And databases, DB2, we do still have vSAM supporting some of our applications. SQL Server is our standard for the server environment. We do run some Informix and motor carriers as a legacy application. We have one Oracle license and use Access on the desktop. So that's sort of the scope of the software environment that we're working in. On page six.
Mr. Chairman.
Hey.
I just want to know, this is not the computer that you are trying to replace, the computer that failed a couple of years ago that you are trying to replace. You know, there was a huge failure of DMV computer a couple of years ago. Is this a system to replace the one that didn't work?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, no, this is what is in our inventory, if you will. These are the systems that we have in place today that we support today.
And you're trying to update it?
We will talk about some initiatives that do update some of these systems, but no, we're not doing a massive updating of any of these systems.
Mm-hmm. Another question. So this is mainly for administrative use.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, may we move to page six?
Mm-hmm.
What this depicts are the types of systems that we do have in place. For example, at DMV, we have what we call point-of-sale systems. These are the systems that people in the field offices use to issue driver's licenses, renew driver's licenses, vehicle registration, and so forth. In motor carriers, we also have online systems for commercial vehicle registration, weight mile tax collection, and so forth. On the highway side, we have systems that are used for engineering, highway planning, maintenance management, so that they're very much integrated into the business. They actually support getting the business done. The administrative systems, I think, would fall more in the central services, more in the accounting and finance types of systems.
Mm-hmm. Another question. Mr. Chairman. So this has nothing to do with the $125 million system that failed.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, no. The systems in that are listed here and under DMV, those were the systems that were to be replaced by that project that failed.
Mm-hmm. You're replacing the project that didn't work. I mean,
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, again, I think there's some specific projects which deal with some of the DMV systems, but it's upgrading some of those systems, but it's not major replacement like the large DMV project, no.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Looking on page 7, wanted to look at some of the business drivers and some of the challenges that as a organization that we deal with. The first one around customer needs, both internal customers to ODOT and also the public. But ODOT, I think, as you're probably aware, is a collection of several different businesses. We have the highway construction maintenance business. We have the motor carrier business with commercial vehicle regulation, tax collection, safety inspection, so forth. DMV with private driver vehicle regulation, licensing, so forth. And then the rail division, safety division, and transit division in their respective areas. So when we start looking at systems, and again, some of those drivers of on the IT organization, every one of these organizations have very specific business needs for systems that are not carryover from area to area. They're very specific to their own business. Central services in that organization, some of the systems there are common across the organization, such as accounting and finance used throughout the organization. Application diversity, we talked about that a little bit on the previous page. Everything from back office accounting systems to engineering CAD tools, design tools, to intelligent transportation systems, where we're actually doing real-time traffic monitoring and traffic control out on the highways. So quite a spectrum of the different types of application diversity, and that is, as we'll see here in a minute, changing even more. Technical complexity, again, multi-platform and development tool environment. And I think when John Cuddy was in here, I think he explained it probably better than I could attempt to, was the sort of building the house of cards, that in the technology environment, it seems like you keep building on and nothing ever goes away. And we certainly have the same situation, both from a technology standpoint and an application standpoint. And we have some systems today that are about 35 years old, still running, and we have some systems that are a month old, so and everything in between. Geographical dispersion, again, the number of offices that we have across the state, both for highway, DMV, and motor carrier, And the other dynamic that's coming into play on a daily basis are the intelligent transportation system components, which we'll talk about later when we get to intelligent transportation. External stakeholders, Federal Highway Administration, putting various requirements on us, such as federal billing some years ago, a requirement for a transportation management system to gather, collect, and report data on pavement, on bridges, on safety, and so forth. The American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, known as AMVA, that we work closely with, both for commercial licensing and private driver licensing. We have city and county partners, and that's increasing as we get more into geographical information systems. Other state agencies, one of the key ones we interface with, of course, law enforcement data systems for access to driver and motor vehicle data by police officers, and then other departments of transportation. We work closely with Caltrans in California with some work down in on the Siskiyou Pass in the intelligent transportation system world. Work with Washington, Idaho, Utah with some activities around commercial vehicle systems. On some of the challenges, and I think they're probably much different than any folks who have come in before me, but certainly finite resources with seemingly a unending demand for services. Legacy applications, several legacy applications. I mentioned some of our DMV systems, for example, are about 35 years old. And a legacy doesn't necessarily mean stable. Sometimes the older we get, the more maintenance we need. And this is
true. I don't understand.
And this is certainly the case with software, and especially some software that was written back in the 60s in assembler language, for example, that we don't have people on our staff anymore who know assembler language. Priority setting with the different businesses and the different types of applications and demands, how do you set the priorities across the organization? And I'll talk about that in a minute with our governance structure. The technology treadmill. As you're well aware, technology changing faster than you keep up with it. We're having conversations around how to move to the internet and start doing e-commerce on the internet. At the same time, the big push now in the industry, of course, is moving to wireless internet, and we haven't even got to wired internet yet. Demand for 7x24 availability. Our motor carriers organization is open 24 hours a day. Truck scales are open 24 hours a day. Email, something that you could run 8x5, no longer true. People want it 7x24. And as we get more and more into the intelligent transportation system, for example, the pass cameras, when it's snowing hard up in the pass at 6 o'clock in the morning, people expect those cameras to be available on the internet. The interesting part is, in dead of winter, you can't see anything, but they still want to see the cameras operating. Procurement requirements are a challenge for us as far as getting things through timely to meet the needs that are coming through the organization. How do we get resources there? How do we get the equipment in place fast enough to meet those needs moving through the current procurement process? New opportunities arise all the time. I mentioned three here, which may not be new to everybody, but they're certainly new to us. E-government is we're all aware of the work we're trying to do with working with DAS as far as moving towards the e-commerce opportunities. Intelligent transportation systems. Oregon was a little bit late out the door with intelligent transportation systems, trying to catch up fast. So a lot of activity occurring in that arena, probably our fastest growing area right now. Geographical information systems was also an area that we've, as an agency, been somewhat behind, which is curious since we're sort of in the map business. but again, trying to play catch-up.
What do you mean, trying to play catch-up?
Mr. Chair, we have several initiatives and mentioned in the back in detail, but one, for example, we haven't had a centralized and standardized approach to GIS across the agency. And so what has occurred is we have, for example, on some of our mapping, we have different standards, accuracy standards. So one of our initiatives is to try to get all our maps back to 1 to 24,000 resolution. The other is being able to use the power, I guess, of spatial data more for management reporting, which we have not done well in the past, and we are working on now. For example, being able to take crash data, bridge data, pavement data, have that data tied to a GIS and be able to graphically depict that in a map form, so I can look at a section of highway and see the number of crashes that have occurred there, and also look at what's the bridge condition, what's the pavement condition at that location, those types of things.
So, I mean, how does this relate back to, we've got something in DAS called something. What I want to understand in terms of how you're working with them, you're sharing data sets so that we don't have duplication of data sets, reducing our overall costs on GIS information systems.
Mr. Chair, I think what you're referring to is the Oregon Geographical Information Council, which ODOT is a member of and a very active member. And in fact, that council has asked ODOT to take the lead in developing the road base layer for GIS to include not only state roads, but BLM and other city and county roads. So we have one road layer, transportation layer for roads. So, so in that case, we are working with the council, taking the lead in one aspect. In other aspects, for example, the Salmon Initiative, we've taken the lead in working with other agencies for doing.
What are you doing with the Salmon Initiative?
Some GIS work of looking at gathering data and pulling that to get data for roadways, for example, and seeing where culverts exist and that type of thing.
We're using trust fund dollars for that effort, or are they being funded out of lottery or Measure 66 dollars, or where are those dollars coming from to pay for that?
Mr. Chair, I don't know, but we'll get the answer for that one.
Okay.
As far as the answer to your question on working with other agencies, I guess the other aspect of that, other than us taking the lead in some activities, we've also we are working with other agencies to get data from them to load into our GIS systems as well. So,
do you consider any of the data sets as proprietary? Or are they shared with other jurisdictions? Or are you working with other jurisdictions in terms of to build this, or are we building this road layer on our own?
Mr. Chair, we're working with other jurisdictions. In fact, we've just started a pilot project with Wasco County to pull in city and county data from Wasco. Actually, we're using some folks from probably gonna get this wrong, Oregon State or University of Oregon, to help in that effort. But no, our intention is not to go out develop this from scratch. We're going to work with the cities and the counties and gather data that already exists. In fact, in many cases, city and counties have much better and more accurate data than we have, so we want to go pull that in.
Okay.
The last item I had on as far as challenges was around recruitment, but recruitment in general, ODOT's been fairly successful in IS recruiting, but I think like other state agencies, when there's very specific skill sets, Java programmers or GIS analysts, those types of folks, we have as much trouble finding those as anybody else in the state government or in the private sector, for that matter. On page 8, this is depicts a sort of busy chart, but going back to all those dynamics of trying to working with very different businesses that we have, different priorities, different types of programs, how do we allocate IT resources and funding across the agency. In 1996, we formed what we call the IT Executive Steering Committee within ODOT, and that is made up of the directors, direct reports, as well as some other key technology users within in the department. And that committee is chartered with establishing IT policy for the organization, helping us define the IT strategy for ODOT, looking at funding levels, how much does the agency think we can afford to fund at any given time on IT and where that should be spent, and trying to set some prioritization between projects. And they are also the owners of the infrastructure. By that I mean if we at some point in time we will make a move to Windows 2000 for the desktop. This committee will be the committee that we take that to, and they will help in that decision making and the funding and when we will move forward with that. The next layer down is what we call communities of interest, and these revolve around the specific businesses within ODOT, and more at the tactical planning level, looking at specific projects. For example, in DMV, the DMV management team takes off their management team hat and puts on their DMV user council hat, and they are the ones that approve projects that will be worked on, put together the information resources management plan for each biennium, and so forth. And that occurs in each of the business areas with my staff and others providing support to that. Then those individual tactical plans are rolled up to that IT Executive Steering Committee. So that's what we put in place for governance. As I said, we started in 1996. It's taken a while to get there, but it's working fairly well now. On page 9, highlight some of the key strategies that drive the initiatives. First of all, is we want to maintain our mission-critical system so that we can maintain services that we deliver to our citizens, and particularly critical in where we have point-of-sale type applications in DMV and motor carrier. Another strategy is to develop a new channel for fee-based services via the Internet, e-commerce. The motor carrier and DMV are looking at initiatives there. We can talk about later. Improve management control and reporting systems. for transportation management systems, financial systems, highway project planning, and so forth. Use technology to aid in traffic management, congestion management, safety, travel information, and traffic incident response, which is a long-winded way of saying intelligent transportation systems. That's in fact what ITS, or Intelligent Transportation Systems, do, those types of things. We also want to leverage past investments where we have standalone systems rather than going out and redeveloping and building a new major system, take advantage of some of the investments we already have, try to integrate those systems either through a common database, better data sharing, putting better front ends on them, so we use a graphical user interface on the front end instead of a character type of front end. As I mentioned earlier, integrating spatial data, GIS, into management decision support systems. An example I use there of being able to look at pavement data graphically along a stretch of highway so you can see what the pavement condition is along a particular stretch of the highway. You can also put over a layer of crash data for that same section of highway, and basically providing analysis tools that the highway planners use. We also want to develop external partnerships to have mature technologies provided by external partners. One example of this is we're working with DAS at this time to consolidate our mainframe data centers. We want to get to the point where we're basically buying mainframe computing resources from DAS. And then also looking wherever we can to partner with other agencies, both within the state or other states' Department of Transportation's related associations where software may already reside that we can import into the state rather than rolling our own, if you will. On page 10, initiatives and cost controls that we've put in place. The first one, Y2K project, did come in $6 million under the forecast, which we're somewhat proud of. We felt we kept that control, that project well controlled.
What did you spend the money on? Did you?
Oh, Mr. Chair, the dollars from Y2K were turned back into the agency, so they were not moved on to other IT initiatives.
Did the agency spend them on something else?
It went back to the highway fund as part of Director Krunikin's effort to get more dollars into preservation and bridge work. So. My assumption is it went there, but we'll check on that. I guess, Mr. Chair, also to clarify that point, that $6 million over the 5 years of the Y2K effort, so there was some dollars saved the previous biennium, 77-99, for example, and then some dollars saved about half of that, $3 million, I think, in this current biennium. But we'll check and get those exact numbers to you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, ODOT had a policy in the last biennium to redirect savings back into highway projects, primarily in preservation and maintenance projects. In the proposed budget, they had, or the current biennium, they had some to reduce their budget because their revenues were not realized as they had anticipated, and so they had to take several cost-cutting measures. And this project is only one of many that where there were savings or where they were where they could reduce their budgets, the agency chose to not do more administrative things and put their project, their money into preservation and bridge preservation.
Continuing on with the efficiencies and cost controls, one of the other areas that we've been very aggressive over the last few years is standardization of our infrastructure. standardized our desktop and server environment across the agency so that basically everybody's using the same hardware and software. We also aggregate personal computer purchases, so we can go in with a large buy and try to reduce the cost of PCs when we do go out and buy them, and use statewide contracts, price agreements, so forth. Also, through some work in the past year, we gained about 30% of the mainframe capacity back. About a year ago, actually about a year and a half ago, the mainframe was running at over 90% utilization, which is almost getting close to the death knell for mainframe. And we did, through moving to what's called a virtual tape storage system and also upgrading our disk storage in partnership with DAS, we're able to get back almost 30% of that capacity of the mainframe, and we're now running down closer to 65% capacity. I mentioned here that we've had several people go through the DAS project management certification program, both people within information systems and people, our business partners, who as we develop applications, we do it certainly in partnership with the business, and in most cases, we like the project manager to actually come from the business, so somebody who knows the business and actually manage that project. And so we've had several of those people go through certification as well as IT people. Electronic distribution with personal computers scattered all over the state became very expensive to go out and hand feed new software updates, whether it's a new virus protection piece of software or fixes to the operating system or whatever it may be. So we have implemented, actually this was jump-started through the Y2K effort to implement software distribution. So in fact, when we do any kind of software upgrade to our PCs, we can do it across the network now.
Yes, yeah, related to Y2K.
Mr. Chair, we implemented, as we got closer to Y2K, and when we first got into the Y2K effort, we thought our PC environment was not going to be that affected by Y2K, naively. As we got further into it, we said, no, that's not correct. And for people to get out and upgrade all those PCs around the state, we said we had to find some way of doing this faster. So that, as I said, we sort of jump-started it with the white tech, sort of got us to thinking how to do it better. The other thing we recognize in Y2K is that we may be down into the November, December 1999 time frame, and Microsoft and other software vendors were still going to be putting out software fixes. So we had to have a way of getting that out very quickly. So when I say Y2K sort of jump-started us, that was our sort of our kick to find a better way of doing it. The last item here is centralization of server management, both bringing in and getting servers that had been scattered around, bringing them into a central server farm. But also, basically, we have tools now that every server on the network can be supported from Salem. So whether that server's in Ontario or Klamath Falls, wherever it may be, we can manage that server from here. On page 11, provided some benchmarks using primarily Gartner Group data, looking at five areas. One was looking at technicians to PCs supported, and one number that Gartner Group puts out is 1 to 69. We have 1 to 150 is what our support. And a lot of that translates back to using a software distribution tool is what helps us get to that level. IT professionals to users, Gartner Group benchmark of 1 to 15 for local and state governments. We're at 1 to 21.
There's a disparity between the number of VCs and individuals.
As far as number of PCs we have and the number of PC users, I can give you a detailed breakout, but we have PCs that are used in training centers, so there's no particular user identified for that. We have, I believe it's about 50-some PCs at the Oregon Women's Correctional Center for DMV. We have administrative PCs and DMV offices that are used for generating reports. In other words, not on the countertops, so they're sort of general, and the same thing in motor carriers. So I can give you a complete list of how that's broken out. In our help desk area, the Help Desk Institute, which is a institute which tracks such things, but the recommendation they have of help desk analysts to number of users is 1 to 120. We have 1 to 255. What I think is more important, though, is what's that help desk doing? Is it a level one help desk where people are just calling in and you're relaying them on to somebody else to fix the problem, or is the problem actually being addressed when the person calls in? With our help desk, the strategy there is to try to fix the problem when the person's actually on the phone. We have set a goal of 80% of the calls coming in to be satisfied during that call. And where we're actually running at the DMV help desk, it's actually 90%+. And at the help desk, which supports the rest of ODOT, it's about 85%. So again, that's just not people calling in, here's your problem, oh, I'm going to pass you on to somebody else. This is understanding what the problem is and getting it fixed right there.
Mr. Chair.
Sir, nothing.
Maybe I missed it. For example, would I ever call into the help desk?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, if you're an ODOT employee.
Okay, this is ODOT
this
employee.
Is for, yes,
okay,
for ODOT employee.
I wanted to double check. Uh-huh.
IT dollars per user, again, a Gartner benchmark of about $10,000 per user. We're about $8,800. A number that I use and track is IT spending as a percent of total budget, which is a number that I use in the private sector quite a bit. Gartner Group had some numbers for government. I didn't particularly believe them because they're up around 9 or 10%, which seemed pretty high to me. But what I looked at is what's the composite for all industries. So that's looking at everything from manufacturing to finance to banking, insurance, construction firms, whatever it may be. Composite of all industries is about 5.28%. We're at 4.75%.
Do you have telecommunications in your responsibilities, or is that in administrative?
Mr. Chair, it's not included in the IT budget.
Is it under your responsibility, or does it come under administrative?
It comes under my responsibility from the standpoint of if people order phones, move phones, then we work with DAS to get those phone orders put through. That's about the extent of it.
You've estimated in this next budget that's $10.5 million for telephone charges. That's about $2,300 per user. I'm assuming that number of employees and I'm just trying to understand whom we are calling and why we are spending $2,300 per user. We've got the 800, which is only about 300,000. That's inbound. That's an awful lot of outbound LD traffic. I'm just trying to understand what we're doing and why we're doing that. Has anybody looked at that?
Mr. Chair, the actual telephone reports and so forth that come from DAS all go to the individual cost centers within the department, where the managers there are responsible for tracking those. We can take a look at, try to get some better handle on the long distance charges and see where those are occurring, and
okay.
Get some analysis for you. On page 12, talk about some of the accomplishments or some of the things we've accomplished. Some of these we've touched as we've gone through, so I'll go through these fairly quickly. One of the, of course, we're fairly proud, as everybody is in the state, I think, with the Y2K effort and how the state came together and agencies worked together, and we all got there. And as part of us getting there in ODOT, our agency was awarded an award from the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials for innovation and quality. And we were one of six out of 130 organizations that were awarded that. I mentioned the disk and virtual tape at the mainframe data center. The other thing that we've done internally, too, from my organization's standpoint, is the developed service level agreements with our internal customers. So we've established baseline service delivery and worked with our customers to set those levels and then measure those as we go along and how we're doing against those. And what that has done for us is, one, certainly helps improve the communication with our customer base, but the other thing, it starts having the discussion of when it comes to wanting increased service, what it takes you to get to that next level, and start having the financial discussions around that service rather than just that I want it.
Let me interrupt you. Project cost accounting, I didn't see anything in any of the initiatives in terms of anybody talk to you about how to implement project cost accounting in DMV in terms of how you integrate that into an IS perspective?
Project cost accounting from standpoint for IT specifically, or
ODOT projects. I mean, I'm just curious in terms of, did we solve that problem? It doesn't seem to sort of filtered into a line item on a project line. So I'm just
Mr. Chair, I think on page 13 we get that second dot point starts getting at that. Yes, we did satisfy the requirement of getting project costs back to the legislature as requested. So we are tracking, pulling some of that information together. It's sort of a combination of, I would say, some automated, some manual. There is an initiative.
Percentage of automated versus
Mr. Chair, I don't know.
So what will they ask you to do in their shop?
Mr. Chair, for this particular initiative, we wrote some access programs, some other data extract programs to pull that information together for reporting.
And what are you pulling the data out of?
Mr. Chair, some of the data comes out of the ODOT accounting system. It also comes out of the, there's a project management system that the highway construction people use, pulls data out of that. One of the initiatives that we have listed later is taking that to another step. As I mentioned, right now some of it's pulling some stuff, doing some download to PCs and doing some manual manipulation of data and generating some reports.
So where is that in here?
Let's see. Under the tab called Project Delivery, and let's see, on page 37, and this particular project is intended to take what has been done to this point, automate it more, being able to pull more detailed automatically, or automate the interface, if you will, from the accounting systems, from the project management systems, from another system we have called the project control system, which is a highway construction related system, pulling all that data together to be able to slice and dice some of the project information to a finer detail.
So what is this? I mean, if you're going to paint a picture of actually what you're doing to accomplish this, how do you explain it?
Mr. Chair, as I understand the project, that this will create a total cost database, be organized by project. It'll be organized by phase of the project, whether it's pre-design, construction, whatever it may be. Also breaking that down as to whether it's bridge work or overlay work or whatever it may be. Then pulling in the labor-related dollars into that, pulling in material-related dollars. Pulling those in from detail level out of the ODOT accounting system, and then being able to generate reports by project, and then looking at that project by the phase, what are the various cost elements of each phase.
So we're capturing in the personnel system in terms of project people and their work by project, so we can pull it into this? I didn't think we did that.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we're actually tying into personnel. I think we're gathering labor dollars out of the accounting system.
So someone is still then guessing that n number of people are working on a specific project, rather than relying on the fact that someone has filled out a time card that says, I spent my time working on this project. It's that issue of the engineers, they're working on multiple projects, how do they distribute and apportion their time across multiple projects, and where are we capturing that data to bring it back into the other? I mean, I understand we can take, we bought this much asphalt, we paved 4 miles of road, and there was, you know, 15 people there from a crew standpoint working, but it's the engineering component. I'm just curious in terms of how we're capturing that data to bring the total cost of the project into
picture. Mr. Chair, I'm tracking with you now. We do have a system called AMS, which is a project management system, which is used for planning projects and then doing resource load leveling for the projects, and then is also capturing time reported to those tasks within the project.
So engineers today are now saying, I'm assigned to 4 projects today. I worked on project A. I'm doing my time to this project, so that we can now go and say how much, how many people worked to engineer this stretch of road.
Mr. Chair, when this particular initiative is done, we will have that.
And these are dependent, this package dependent on the fee increase?
No, Mr. Chair, this is in the base. Going back to page 13, in the highway central services transit rail safety development areas, listing here of several projects have been done, but I draw your attention to the last dot point. In this particular application development area, there aren't a lot of large projects, tend to be very small, very quick hit kind of projects. And as I indicated here, this biennium to date, they've completed like 124 separate projects. So that's really quick turn, quick hit kind of types of things.
Next to page 32, the first project, the Migrate Transport System Decline Server. What percentage of the cycles on the mainframe is being taken up by that application today?
Mr. Chair, I don't know exactly, but I would say it's very small. The major reason for moving this to client server is that the software vendors stopped supporting the mainframe software and is moving all future development to the client server environment. And
Chair, which one are you talking about? I'm sorry.
Number one on page 32.
Page 32. Migrate.
Mr. Chair, I can get you through our mainframe accounting system. I can get you an answer.
I'm just trying to understand in terms of we had a conversation about cost benefits. The answer is we removed it because the application is no longer supported. And I'm just curious what the long-term cost is. If it doesn't take a significant workload off of the mainframe, it's actually going to increase your workload, because you still have to maintain, you're going to be maintaining multiple systems. But I'm just, to drive to get off the mainframe, get as many applications off or keep on sort of that.
Mr. Chair, in general, we've moved some applications off the mainframe. The thing that has moved most of our applications off the mainframe has been more that the vendors have moved from that environment, and that we have ended up moving with them is the major reason. If you look at our mainframe environment today, about 70%, 70 plus percent of the cycles are used by DMV. The next largest user is the ODOT accounting system. And then the third largest user is a motor carrier with some of their legacy systems. And after that, it drops off down into the percentage points.
And what is a resource subsystem? Number two. Every work planning resource.
That was our error. That should read, Mr. Chair, that should read resource leveling system. And this is getting back to that prior conversation of from a planning standpoint, not the reporting side, actual reporting side of engineers, but from the planning side of being able to identify if I do have engineers that are going to be working on four or five projects over the next 2 years, how do I load that labor, especially if those projects are located around the state and I have people from different parts of the state working on that. So that particular project is to provide the tools to do resource leveling and planning.
Do you anticipate any savings in terms of being able to better utilize resources? Have you identified any objectives on this? Sort of what the benefits of spending $500,000 on it is?
Mr. Chair, I don't have that with me, but I will get back to the project team on that, get an answer.
Is this a standalone system? Is it a subcomponent of a software package you've already purchased? Is this being designed in-house? I mean, what is it?
Mr. Chair, this is being used in concert. Actually, it's going to be some internally developed software for actually using professional services to, as I understand it, to develop interfaces with that AMS, that project scheduling or project management system.
I notice we're spending about $50,000 to interface Microsoft Project to it. So, I mean, it would be cheaper just to buy Microsoft Project for everybody. Rather than, well, I'm just trying to understand, if we don't pick up and move resources from one region to another region, do we?
Mr. Chair, no, we don't move resources around. We may have some collaborative work that's done between people in Salem and, say, a design unit in one of the regions.
So I'm just trying to understand the value of an elaborate system, where a $300 program has resource leveling capabilities within it. I'm just trying to understand what benefit it's going to derive. If we're not managing people picking up and moving across the state some other place and they're living within the region, how are they doing it today?
Okay.
A lot of money.
I agree. Mr. Chair, let me come back with an answer on the specifics around that as to the Microsoft interface is primarily designed for outside firms that use.
I appreciate
use
value.
And
I'm just trying to understand in the context when I start adding up all these individual line items, we actually get to some serious dollars, and just trying to understand what the value is. So it's not a reaction to what you said here. Get us data. And if it is, I want my colleagues to understand, that we're off asking people to go spend $500,000 for something to satisfy a need that we've determined, or is it an internal need that you've identified? I'm trying to, if we know what the benefits of spending that money is and how it's going to make it, what's the return on the investment? Sort of what's our ROI on $500,000 for resource leveling?
Okay.
And then the project we're planning interface to project control system, sort of the same question, what is this? These are nice acronyms, they don't mean anything to me. So,
Mr. Chair, I might suggest that when we come back that maybe Mike Wolf, who is the program manager for project delivery.
Okay. Is this something you can show us? You can show up and actually show something to us running, or is it not like that?
I think the answer to that is there's various pieces running, and a lot of some of these initiatives are trying to pull these things together so they actually operate together, start sharing data between these standalone systems.
Okay.
Back to page 14.
Okay.
Other accomplishments, DMV is implementing the third phase of the automobile liability insurance reporting. This is to give law enforcement officials the opportunity or the capability of if they make a stop, be able to check on the whether a motorist has insurance or not. That's some legislation from several sessions ago. Completed.
I guess I'm curious on that. What kind of information do you have? Let's say, for example, my insurance was renewed, and I carry that little renewal stuff in my car. do you have the same, for example, did my insurance company notify you when I renewed my insurance? How do you have that information?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, what we're putting in place is a capability of the insurance companies will actually be electronically sending that information to the DMV, and will be loaded into the DMV files.
Okay, Mr. Chair, if I may. Okay, that's accomplishment. You have, what's the third phase? Okay, how many phases are there in that program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, this is the last phase.
Okay, so when this is completed, will I need to carry that little slip in my car?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, I think the recommendation is to probably continue to carry that.
I'm just curious. I always worry I'll forget to put that in my car.
Lorna Young, Deputy Director for DMV. Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, for some time, insurance companies have been sending to us electronically the information about who is and who is carrying insurance. The third phase now allows us to interface with the law enforcement data system so that police, when they are out doing their routine inspections, can look on the lead system and determine whether or not an individual has current insurance. That still does not relieve you from the responsibility of carrying the insurance card in your car and carrying the insurance card on your person, because there is going to be there's a lag time. The law requires that we are notified within 15 days of a cancellation and 30 days of an issuance of a new policy, and there's a 24-hour period to load it. So at any one time when the officer pulls up your screen, there is a chance that it may not be entirely accurate, and they will still have to work out the policy considerations of what do they do when the person carrying has different information from what we have on our database from the standpoint of whether they cite or do not cite.
Well, Mr. Jeff, I can ask a question.
Certainly.
It's interesting then. They're going to check, and they may have accurate information, or it may be lifetime information. What's the purpose then if we have the card in the automobile? Why do you need this particular one? I'm sure there's a reason. I'm just trying to make sense out of it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, this gives them probable cause to stop a car. If they pull up the screen and see no insurance, then they would have probable cause to stop the car. Otherwise, they're only checking for your insurance if they have stopped your car for some other reason.
Officer could just be driving down the road. I'm in front of him. He just taps in to see if he puts my license number in and sees if my insurance is up to date. If it's not, then he could stop me.
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, that is correct.
I see. Okay. That's good punching.
Mr. Chair.
Representative, Senator Yee.
Thank you. I thought that insurance companies do not want to notify DMV whenever there is a cancellation. I thought they indicated it's too much paperwork for them, and they weren't going to do it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, it is required by law
to notify DMV every time there's a cancellation?
Yes.
Oh.
My understanding is they actually like that because it forces people to actually have and maintain insurance.
And another question.
And
they follow up whenever the policy is renewed?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, yes. The statute requires that they notify us within 30 days of the issuance of a new policy and within 15 days of the cancellation of a policy. And they load data, they provide that data to us electronically.
Mr.
Chair, may I ask a question follow up on hers? That let's say you have noticed. You get notice, and we won't use me. This is John Jones down here, has been canceled, and you show no record of insurance. Is there some way you can trigger and notify them that you now know they don't have insurance?
Senator Duncan, we have a routine process whereby we sample records, and as part of our enforcement mechanism of the uninsured motorist issue, law enforcement, of course, does the bulk of that.
I'm sorry, what?
Law enforcement also is heavily involved in the analysis of whether or not, I mean, of enforcing whether or not you have insurance. But we don't have a process in place where we say, oh, I notice you've been canceled, and because there may be very legitimate reasons why insurance is canceled. You may no longer own the car, or you're no longer driving, or you have a new policy someplace else.
Same thing, we only require insurance on a vehicle if it's moving on the road, so you have to sit in your driveway.
Right, you have to sit in your driveway, I realize that, yeah. Okay, it just seems to me like it could be a good reminder to somebody. Because a lot of people, I wonder, does anyone have any idea how many uninsured drivers are running on the road? Have you done any just projected kind of figures? Because my guess is it would be rather frightening if we realized that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, we have, as part of our DMV budget proposal, some money put forward to do an analysis of the uninsured motorist issue in Oregon.
Is it your guess it's going to be high?
I don't know.
We'll get you the money maybe to figure it out. Huh?
Thank you.
Thank you, yes.
You've got the integrated transportation information system, linear reference system, which is GIS. I'm reading the notes, or maybe GIS is one of the, I guess it's, you use GIS where feasible. And then you've got the GIS initiative, and I'm just curious. How do you map both of those things together since they're two separate projects and essentially, I'm assuming, capturing the same data?
The Mr. Chair, the project that you indicated, the Integrated Transportation Information System, is in fact a database which we have today, which is a data-oriented database for highway attribute information. Number of lanes, width of shoulder, location of culverts, and so forth. And it's all based upon mile points. The intent of this particular project is to, with the linear referencing system, is to move away so that the only that you can use, such as GIS type of data to locate, X, Y type of coordinates, so you can locate features that are off the highway or somewhat located differently than just by a mile point, which then ties you to a GIS environment so that you can take a stretch of highway, draw a square around that particular stretch of highway, pulling data out of this database and pulling up all the attribute information, not only located by mile point, but then also by XY coordinate around that particular.
Wouldn't mile points just be a point on a GIS data set? So in terms of, I just want to go out and create two systems. If we're going to go out and we're mapping all these culverts and everything, it would seem to me that someone could figure out how to put in the mile points and capture it all in one system versus multiple systems, so that we don't end up with one project going one direction, another project going the other direction, and somebody later on coming in and saying, hey, wouldn't it be neat if we merged these two things and we could have done it from the get-go?
Mr. Chair, the intent is that these are running together from the get-go. Basically, this becomes the base database. GIS is basically, GIS itself is a reporting tool, the software. So it will be using the information out of this database to pull attribute information to display graphically or on a map. Today, when you go into this file, what you get is a tabular report of information as opposed to having it displayed on the map. Which is also, Mr. Chair, the other reason why, as I mentioned earlier, one of the objectives of the GIS work with the Transportation Foundation is to get all the roads down to the same level of accuracy.
I note down here on page 41 of receiving a federal grant. Bottom of page 41. Class not reflecting on our plan, I expect over 50 grant funds are being pursued for this project.
Mr. Chair, when the actual IRM plan for the agency was put together last year, this particular project was not listed in there because there was not identified funding for it because of going after the grant money.
So
what that's trying to say.
So R should be changed to were. My question is, did you go pursue a grant? Who approved it? Did you guys come and ask that maybe keep a grant application? Or are you going to ask us to do that?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that the grant has been requested by the department.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, when the Department of Transportation receives federal money, they do it in block to the federal transportation. This is part of their safety grant, ongoing monies that come forward. There is an IRM element. They're seeking specific approval. That would be included under the umbrella of their federal grant program.
So it's not like other grants?
Correct.
Okay. That's my conclusion. Okay.
It is 5 o'clock.
Any questions up to this point?
Okay.
Thank you very much. We'll close the public hearing. Without